Okay, here we go again, another persiflage, this one, number 26, half a year of this crap, September 13th, 2001. I should perhaps pause and explain, for those of you who have not been listening to the persiflage podcasts thus far, that what is happening is that I am reading aloud old issues of persiflage magazine. From, well, in this case, 2001. And why am I doing this, you might ask? Well, there isn't a good answer for that, so make up one of your own. But at any rate, that's what I'm doing. And we've done 25 of them so far. And here we go with number 26. So hold on to your hats. First up is the essay, The Befuddlement of Hubris. I am convinced I'm right. It's just that I don't know about what. Yet, I guess I should say, although I am less convinced about certainty, even in the distant future, than I am about uncertainty. Even there, I'm on pretty shaky ground. To me, Hamlet seems way too sure. I don't have the luxury of a ghost. That would be nice. Some dead guy to point the way. The only dead guys who speak to me at all are Kafka and Charan. Little help? So why am I convinced I'm right? Well, in the last few lines of the above paragraph, some of that feeling slipped away. Almost all of it, in fact. Yet one thing gives me something that I wouldn't really want to call hope. When I look around me, I see nothing but people who can't possibly be anything but wrong. And I'm obviously not working on anything close to the same plan as they are. So doesn't that make me right? If only I could have understood something out of all those logic classes. Math was never my long suit, even when we were counting apples and oranges or ants at a picnic. When they started applying those same techniques to thoughts and feelings, I was really lost. Just don't mention syllogisms to me. I don't even know what they are, never mind how to make one. Or if, by chance, I somehow managed to, I would have no idea what to do with it. Where does one keep such a thing? Do they need regular maintenance? That kind of thing is clearly beyond me. I'm not handy. In fact, real-world-wise, I'm sadly lacking in skills. For instance, I'm more at a loss in a bank than one of Leacock's heroes. I can't fix anything, even a cat. Although I understand that most of that kind of work is farmed out by ordinary folks now. I can't drive, which seems to be a terrible admission in this day and age, and what's worse, I have no desire to. I have enough trouble maneuvering my own sad corporeal being around without throwing a couple of thousand pounds of metal into the equation. But I have to say, and this goes back to my original premise of being right about something, that I don't, maybe even can't, understand why the hell anyone else wants to do these things. It just seems crazy to me. Maybe that's what I'm right about. I can't do anything. I don't want to do anything because the options are wrong. The things I'm supposed to do or want to do are wrong, flawed in some way, off the mark, crazy. I'm convinced I'm right. The whole thing is nuts. Or maybe I'm wrong. Hubris. Well, not a lot to hang on to in that one, is there? Let's see what's up next. Oh, a poem by someone named Glenn Johnson. How's that for a coincidence? It's entitled, It Was Not My Intention. Tiredly slumped on the dark evening bus, rattling home from another too long day, I see, past my own reflection in the window, the stern disapproval, I imagine, of older, more well-dressed men, who imagine my slovenliness a fashion, and not the result of a series of mistakes and miscalculations that cast me out, creaking and wheezing, on the less than welcoming shores of the loading dock I just left. Hmm. And then there is an extremely short story, it says, entitled An Extremely Short Story. And there's no credit here, so I have no idea who wrote this. Here we go. Once upon a time, there was a very small little... This is very redundant. I'm going to repeat myself like this. It won't be a very short story at all. Girl who loved, adored, and very much admired... Oops, there I go again. This really isn't working out very well. Her pet teddy, whom she called Ludwig, although his actual name was Hernando... It's unclear from the existing records how Ludwig Hernando felt about the little girl, who shall remain nameless because I don't want to say that her name was Gilda Bonners and that she lived on Borbank. At any rate, the severely undersized girl and her much-loved bear were in the habit of traveling around in an old shoebox that had a series of spools nailed on to function as wheels. Let me just clarify the spools, which formerly held thread... I'm unsure what color it was, were four in number, and were roughly, I mean, approximately, well, in actual fact, carefully placed on the four corners of the box. I hope that's clear. Oh, the hell with it. Well, I think this is probably a very good reason that no one signed that. What a terrible... Anyway. Oh, here we go. A letter. A letter. A very odd letter. Dear Persiflage, I never liked Dave Seville. The chipmunks I'm okay with, but Dave Seville bothers me. It's something about the way he treats them. He's not their father, obviously. That would just be ridiculous, and yet he acts like it. He's always telling them what to do. They're chipmunks, for Christ's sakes. They know what to do. I knew a chipmunk once. His name was Alfredo. He also hated Dave Seville, but for personal reasons. It seems that Seville was in the habit of hanging around chipmunk bars and hitting on all the chipmunk boys. This makes his behavior around Alvin and the boys highly suspect, in my opinion. Just thought I'd share my thoughts on the subject. Thank you. Sincerely, a concerned animal lover, and I mean nothing salacious about that. Dear confused animal lover, it seems to us very odd that anyone is even thinking about Alvin and the Chipmunks, never mind Dave Seville. But now that you mention it, there was something more than a little disturbing about that relationship. Perhaps you should address your concerns directly to Simon, the only surviving chipmunk, who currently resides in a home for aging rodent cartoon figures in Upper New York State. Hopefully, L. Rose Watermelon. Oh, and it looks like quotations next. Clever stuff from a bearded Viennese coke addict. I think we can all guess who that is. One may suppose that the founding of families was in some way connected with the period when the need for genital satisfaction, no longer appearing like an occasional guest, had settled down with each man like a permanent lodger. The characteristic of what is male and female can only be demonstrated in anatomy and not in psychology. And finally, from old Sigmund Freud, not all men are worthy of love. Then we have a second quotation section, not Sigmund Freud quotes, entitled More Clever Stuff. One must forgive one's enemies, but not until they are brought to execution. Heinrich Heine. The reasonable man achieves nothing. James Joyce. And finally, classified advertisements. Wanted. Young men with a penchant for Mad Magazine-type humor and a well-developed skill in savate. Object, an all-out assault on the senses. Reply, box 34. For sale, tiny photograph of the Queen Mother riding what appears to be T.E. Lawrence's motorcycle. possibly fake, but what do you care? Reply to Box 12. A single man of mild disposition and somewhat less mild odor seeks woman with a love of Kierkegaard and fly fishing. Must be tolerant and forgiving. Reply to Box 378. And that's it for this week. So goodbye.